My name is Clancy Emerson. I'm an alcoholic. It's very nice to be here this evening, safe and sane and sober, because I didn't used to be and I may not be again someday. That's the nature of the illness, unfortunately. Yeah. I really enjoy that singing. I'm from a different generation where it isn't anywhere near so beautiful. The words are like, "Won't you come with me? I know the place. They got a old piano and a knockdown bass. Got a drummer man they call 8-Beat Mac. Better than old Beat Me Daddy Slacky. Better than chicken fried and bacon grease. It's just down the road a piece." When I could play that on the piano and sing, I became terribly popular. Anyway, I'm very glad to be here. And I have a strange topic tonight, the gift of AA. That's like saying, describe a star in heaven. There's thousands of gifts in AA. And don't remember what they all are, but there's a lot of them. I've been in jail for a long time. Haven't been in the Texas Nut House for 50 years. So it all works out. We have to go back almost to the beginning of these two guys to discover what the concept of the gift of AA is. Remember, Dr. Bob was a drunk, and Bill Wilson came into town to Akron. They got them together, and they met in this lady's house. They talked for a while, and when they came out of there, old Dr. Bob said to his wife, he said, I can't tell you how surprised I am. I thought I was the only one in the world with those emotions. And he's got them too. And then Dr. Bob said to Bill, could you stay with us for a few days and talk some more? He said, yeah. So we stayed with him for a week. And every day they talked about spiritual values and how you could enhance your spiritual values. And Dr. Bob said, could you stay with my family this weekend, please? I want to go to an international convention in Atlantic City for the American Medical Association. I was there last year and I was so drunk and they all ridiculed me. And I was so embarrassed I got home. And I want to go and show them this year how I feel. He said, fine, Bill, Bob, I'll wait. So he said, Ann and his wife, Bill, I'll be home Tuesday morning, early on the early morning train. And so they were all excited away he went to the big convention. Tuesday morning, I got a call on the phone early in the morning. Woman was on the phone. She said, Mrs. Smith, I'm sorry, this is the doctor's office nurse. But they carried him off the train this morning so drunk he couldn't walk. I guess the experiment didn't work. And the station agent knows that I work for him, so he called me. I came down here and got a taxi, and we wrestled Dr. Bob into the car, and we taped him to his office. He's lying on the floor of his office now crying. And she said, well, I'll get Mr. Wilson, and we'll come down and get him. So they came down to get him, and he was so drunk, and he cried all the way back. I don't know anything more sickening than a sorry drunk. He just, now you're sorry, you son of a bitch. And there's a whole bunch of empty seats down here. They're afraid you're going to sell them your book. I shouldn't say that because I just bought a whole set of the books from Steve. And I paid him top dollar to send them to me. And I got a little great-granddaughter in Hawaii who I'm trying to... She's so cute. She's really a darling little girl. And I have a hard time loving her because she's half Japanese. And I spent my youth in the Pacific fighting the Japanese. And she's just so sweet, so I'm going to give her these books and see if she'll shape up, get her eyes round. Well, anyway, alcoholism has been around in its various forms for many, many, many years, you know. And we all know the story, I guess, that they were going to send Roland, this wealthy family had a son named Roland who was a bad drinker. They were going to send him to see Dr. Freud, to see if Dr. Freud could help him. And I'm going to tell you, I've never done this before, but I'm going to tell you a little story about Dr. Freud. You don't know this, but before this kid went over there, 5 years before that, two American men had gone over to see Dr. Freud. He says, well, he says, I'm very pleased to talk to Americans. I never have. I've talked to all sorts of nationalities. He says, and what is your problem, sir? He says, what's the darndest thing, doctor? I get the feeling that I'm a teepee. And when I'm sleeping, and there are Indians trying to get inside of me. A teepee. And what's your problem, sir? He said, well, I've got another disease just like that. I sleep and I think I'm a wigwam. And there are Indians trying to get at me all night long. And I wake up and sometimes just in a sweat. He said, a teepee and a wigwam, huh? I think I see your problem. You're too tense. Yeah. Now, what other meeting would you ever hear such a good story as that? But anyway, they're going to send Roland over to see Dr. Freud, and Dr. Freud refused the case. I can't help him. Because alcoholism was not unknown, and everybody in the world, every doctor in the world had tried to help alcoholics to no value at all, to help for a while to get drunk. So they looked up his student, Dr. Jung. They wrote to him, and he said, yes, bring him over. So they brought Roland over there from New York. His parents paid this rather large sum for his cure. And Dr. Jung worked with him for a year, every day, to help him break through the bonds of psychological things that were keeping him drinking. And finally he said, Roland, I think you've passed the bar now. You've done well. You've achieved what you have to do. I think you can go home now. He said, well, thank you, doctor. So they went home. He and his keeper went home. But they stopped in Paris because his wealthy family had some wealthy friends there who had heard about Roland's problem. They would have a big party for him. They had a big party for him. And everybody had toasted Roland with a glass of wine. And Roland had a little glass of wine too. And 3 days later, he was drunk on the street, vomiting up everything he had. So they took him back to Dr. Jung. They said, I don't know what the problem is, doctor, but he only had a little glass of wine, and all of a sudden he started drinking heavily. He said, well, I'm afraid I can't help you, Roland. You are really captured in the bonds of alcoholism. And Roland said, is there no solution? He said, well, I've gone through all the literature. And the only solution I've ever seen, and I've never seen a case of it, but in the literature they talk about some spiritual values they change, and they have what they call a spiritual experience, but I've never seen one. I think you have a better chance by being hit by lightning than getting a spiritual experience. So he came home, and this time he didn't stop in Paris for a party, but on that ship coming from France to America, he had to do something, I suppose, that all of us have to do, whether we know it or not. He surrendered to the fact that he was hopeless. And he got back, and he didn't drink, and he was doing fine, and he seemed to be, but he knew it was just a matter of time before he'd be drunk again. And one of his friends says, they got this new thing over in Jersey called the Oxford Movement. It seems to be helping people. He said, the Oxford, I'll find out about it, will you? And so they went and found it out about it. A Lutheran minister in Pennsylvania in about 1908 had the feeling that Christianity was getting too loose, that people should give it all they got. He said, they used to be crucified for their faith. Now they won't even come to church if it rains. You know, he set up this whole big deal where you had to give it all you got. I didn't get many takers, obviously. Who's good? No, I don't think I want to be crucified today. Thank you very much, Reverend. And but after the war, First World War, he traveled through Europe extensively, tried to peddle it, nobody wanted it. Of all the places where they wanted it and they grabbed it was Oxford University. All the students said, that's exactly what we need, great! And so much so that they changed the movement to the Oxford movement. And he brought it back to America in the 1920s, and with the impetus of the Oxford University behind him and all the wealthy people in New England. And so he was able to set up all sorts of Oxford group meetings all over the United States. Every city sooner or later had an Oxford group. But it was a different movement than he had in mind. What it was is people would get together, well-to-do people, get together at each other's homes and just discuss how they could improve their lives spiritually. And it developed quite a following. And that's why it's referred to this boy, why should you go over to New Jersey, go to a meeting? And he did. And he was taken by it. He said, that's a good idea. I can do that. And he stayed sober. And he got a guy named Bill Wilson to go to the Oxford group. And he took it on. Oh, I love this. He was a bad drunk too. And Bill Wilson went down to see the doctor in the hospital. He said, I've been sober almost a month now. He said, I can't believe it. I'm not going to drink. The doctor said, that's very good, Bill, because I don't know why you come to us for help. We can't help anybody. We sober them up, put them back on the street, and a month later they're back drunk and sick. We have no solution. But maybe that'll help you. So he went to the Oxford group. And he, as he was doing well, he got a letter from his friends on Wall Street saying, we understand you now, you've had almost a year without a drink, Bill, and you were a good guy, good man. If you'd like to work for us again, please do. Come on down and see us. So we went down to Wall Street, and he said, yeah, you are sober. No question about it. We have a bunch of proxy votes. We got to get a hold of in Akron, Ohio. We're trying to take over a company there. It's a rubber manufacturing company. And they make rubber tools and things. So that's just ideal for our work. And if you get out there and get a hold of them, but if you screw up, you're done on Wall Street. I mean, don't screw up because we're taking a big chance on you because we think you're doing better. So away he went to Akron, we all know, and the deal blew up in his face. Wasn't his fault. But now he'd have to go back to New York and explain it. And his wife would be heartbroken, and all his friends he'd brag to about his new job would be disappointed in him. And he was standing in the lobby of the hotel downtown Akron. I was there 2 months ago in that hotel. And he just looked around and thought, what chance have I got? There's no chance. And from a door over here, he heard the sounds of music and glasses tinkling and girlish laughter. He knew that's what I just had a couple drinks. I'd be all right. I wouldn't go through this. He started to walk over. Each step he took diminished his crowd by about 100. And he finally, out of the corner of his eye, across the room, he saw some payphones on the wall. For those of you who are young, used to be big black phones called payphones. And you never had to do this. You just put in a nickel. And he had promised his friends in New York he would not do anything drastic unless he called somebody in the Oxford movement. So in small town hotels, you may or may not remember, but over the payphones they'd always have the churches and the ministers and their phone number. So he looked up the first phone number and he dialed it. And he said, my name is Bill Wilson. I'm a rum hound from New York. I've got to find somebody in the Oxford movement. man said, I'm sorry, I don't know what you're talking about, but I'm trying to write a sermon. Please don't bother me. Hung up. And about that time, I'd be taking a walk from, you know, screw you, Jim. But he called the other number. Next number didn't answer. Next number didn't answer. And he was at a stage, and think about this, when you're feeling bad, you just want a couple drinks, and nobody wants to help you. And he decided to go and have a couple drinks, but there was one last name down there. And he called him up, and the man, it turned out to be the only man in Akron who could help him. He said, funny you should call. I have a parishioner who's very active in the Oxford group, and she was telling me just yesterday that they have a doctor in their group who just admitted this week he was an alcoholic. We've all been praying for him, but apparently he's still drunk. So she said, let me contact his wife. Maybe I can get you to get together with him. And Bill said, okay. And anyway, they arranged for Bill to go out to this wealthy woman's house, and Dr. Bob and his family would come out to the house. They would meet, and maybe Bill would talk to Dr. Bob and it would help him. And so Bill went out there the next morning, Mother's Day, 1935, and Dr. Bob went out there in his car, but he was too sick to drive. He was hungover and sick. His son drove, who later became a very active group member of our group, not of Alcoholics Anonymous, but of Al-Anon. He kept burying alcoholics. He'd be around for tomorrow's meeting. And but he always described going out there. He said, I was sitting in the front, driving, I was 16. My sister was sitting there, and my folks were in the back. And all the way out there, my dad kept telling my mother, he said, Ann, I'm so sorry. I guess I ruined Mother's Day for you because I'm drunk again. But he said, I'm going to go out there, and the guy's going to give me a lecture on my drinking. I'm not doing it. He can't stand any more lectures on my drinking. But since it's Mother's Day, I'll do it for you. I'll give the guy 10 minutes. So they're out there, and they had a little bite to eat, and they went to the doctor, and the Wall Street guy went to a little room. They were in there 3 hours. They came out, and that's when he said, my God, Ed, I can't believe this. The guy's got the same feelings I have. He said, Bill, could you possibly stay around a week and we can talk some more? He said, yes. So we stayed there. And a week later, the office girl called up and said, Dr. Bob is just drunk out of his mind. So they went down, got him, brought him home. I don't know if anybody does much 12-step work here, but a crying drunk is something you just want to slap. Bang! I'm sorry. Took him home and undressed him, put him to bed. And that was the end of that experiment. And Dr. Bob, Bill, thought, what the hell happened? He was doing so well, and he understood it all. But Thursday morning, Dr. Bob sat up in his bed suddenly and said, what day is it? It's Thursday, Bob. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, he said. I've got to do a cancer surgery this morning. And look at my hand. I can't hold a knife. They'll take my license. What can I do? So his new friend Bill went out and got him some beer to steady his hand. And away he sent, away he went. So I'll be home by 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So they waited at 2 o'clock. He didn't come. 3 o'clock, he didn't come. 4 o'clock, he didn't come. 5 o'clock, he didn't come. Son of a bitch is drunk again, sure. 6 o'clock, he came in the door, cold sober. Said, hi, I'm home. He said, where you been, Bob? You were supposed to be home 4 hours ago. He said, when I was doing that operation, I got thinking about the Oxford group, and one of their tenets is making amends. And I never thought that applied to doctors. But I realized all of a sudden, I'm a human first and then a doctor second. And so I've been all afternoon, all day, all over Akron, make amends to people. And I feel wonderful. And that was June 10th, 1935. And that was considered the birthday of AA, because neither one of those two guys, the doctor or the Wall Street guy, ever drank again. And they didn't know what to do. But Bill kind of thought, what the hell happened here? I stayed sober. And suddenly Bill happened to think, I stayed sober going down to that damn hospital trying to help people. None of them ever got help, but it helped me. That's what we need. We have to find somebody to help. So we called up this Akron hospital. Got hold of this nun, Sister Ignatia. And she worked on a ward where they had people with various illnesses. But at that time, you couldn't get into a hospital with alcoholism. You had to die on the street. You had to have something wrong with you, and there was something wrong with his pleural cavity. And so he was in the hospital. The doctor said, is there anybody in the hospital we can you talk to? She said, yes, I have Bill D here. He's a lawyer from, moved here from Louisville a few years ago, and but he can't stay sober. Can we come down and talk to him? Sister Gage said, well, I'll have to clear it with his wife because she's a rather strong person. And so they set it all up, and the next day they went out to her house, and these two guys went into a side room and spent their time. And the doctor couldn't believe what he was hearing. I can't believe it. I thought for sure I was the only one in the world like me. And there's another guy just like me. And they talked to Bill. But they didn't talk to Bill about his drinking at all. Bill Wilson knew better than that. He said, talk to him about our drinking. So they talked about their drinking and their feelings. I heard Bill D. talk probably 40 years ago. He said, I was laying in that bed in Akron, Ohio. My wife came in and said, two fellas want to help me with my drinking. I said, absolutely not. I've had all the lectures about my drinking I can stand. No, don't ever ask me again. But my wife's a rather strong woman. So I talked to those two fellas. And they didn't talk to me about my drinking once. They talked about their drinking and how they felt. And I couldn't believe my ears. I'm not the only one. Same thing Dr. Bob said. I'm not the only one. And he said, I was so impressed. I stuck with them fellas, and I've been with them ever since. And he was number three in the chain. And they weren't getting much around Akron. No drunks wanting over to get in the Oxford group. They got a young guy, 29, Ernie. And they said, you're not an alcoholic because you're only 29. But you drink like one, so you can be with us. But now we're going to, Ernie fell in love with Dr. Bob's daughter. Beautiful thing. Isn't that nice? That happened to my family. My youngest daughter fell in love with one of my babies. And against all of my yelling, they got married. I said, don't marry that son of a bitch. And anyway, the absolute cynosure of mixed emotions is watching your daughter go down the aisle to marry someone whose fifth step you've heard. You can't really say anything, but you can give hints. Let me know if you ever bring your sheep home. But they were surprised when he stayed home to take care of his wife. He said, you stay home now, Ernie, take care of your wife. You're a husband now, and you're a man who has to get a good job and take care of your wife. So he stopped going to the meetings, and he stayed home with his wife. And they were disappointed when he got drunk. And he was drunk for 50 years off and on. I remember when young Bob told me many, many years later, I met Ernie the other day, and he was sober a year. This was 50 years afterwards. But he was pleased. And they finally got together, and then Bill went home back to New York, and he got a few guys and started a program there with the Oxford group, and little by little it took place, and then 1938, asked Bill to write some of this down that we're doing and see if we can get it printed up. It's good to have, give to newcomers. So he wrote the first chapter of the book, which we call Alcoholics Anonymous. Didn't have it. They're going to call it The Way Out. But when it went to the patent office, there were 25 books written already with a Way Out name. So they had to find a different name. And a guy up in Cleveland who had been coming to meetings, named Chuck, Charles, what was his name? Huh? Clarence, yeah. How do you know so much? Clarence. He and his group had been coming down to Akron to be with Dr. Bob and the Oxford group, and they were doing quite well. But the bishop of Cleveland said, they're Protestants. They're Protestants. No good can come of that. So he said, you have to stay here. So they stayed in Cleveland, and he started a group up there, and he called it Alcoholics Anonymous. He didn't really start Alcoholics Anonymous, as he said later, but he gave it the name. And they, little by little, they grew, and they've grown ever since. But the one thing in that whole chain of events that was different was when Bill Wilson remembered, I've got to talk to somebody about this. Dr. Bob has to talk to someone about this. We have to find someone to tell about it. And I tell you, when you think of all the wonderful things of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm not going to go on very long, but the greatest gift really was the knowledge that you have to talk to somebody, and the outcome of that great wisdom is that there's a sense of identification. There's a lot of books on alcoholism written about in the 1930s that you can see Bill is cribbed from. And you say, well, what do we need our book for? That's that book. Because our organization had something nobody else had. One alcoholic talking to another alcoholic about the nature of the illness and awakening in that person. My God, I'm not the only one. My God, I'm not the only one. So to me, the great gift of Alcoholics Anonymous has always been identification. It's the same thing today in Los Angeles as it is here. You talk to people and you try to get them to listen or go to meetings and listen to people. Eventually, sooner or later, well, I believe I've got that very same thing. Yes, you have. Here's your chance to do something about it. And every one of us are here today because somewhere along the line, someone has shown us that we were not so different. That there's other people like us, and they're called alcoholics. And therefore, we must be an alcoholic too. I remember I was in and out of AA for 10 years. I could never believe I was an alcoholic. I didn't know what I thought an alcoholic was, but somebody drank more than I did. And I had a sponsor who was mean to me. Well, it's very ha 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 to you. You're not sensitive the way I am. But I had a guy who'd pick me up in the afternoon, evening. He'd call ahead. I was sleeping in the parking lot of the AA club. And he'd call up and say, get the kid out there in the corner at 6 o'clock. So they'd be in the corner at 6. I'd be out at 6. And he'd come up to this big Lincoln. He'd take me somewhere. I just had my front teeth kicked out. So I wasn't really hitting those consonants quite as cleanly as I would like. But he took me someplace and bought me scrambled eggs or soup or something that I could eat. Then we'd go to a meeting. He spoke a lot. And I just sat in the front row like these poor girls. And listen, they're doing the same thing to me. They're going, I guess so I could give his talk better than he could. I thought, geez, I can't take much more of this. Then on the way back to the mission, or to the club, he would tell me about God. He'd give me his experiences with God. It just made me crazy. And I thought, how can I stop this? I thought, he's such an egotistical bastard. I'll ask you a question. He'll give me an hour and a half answer of it. And on the way back to meeting that night, I said, you know, Bob, I really enjoyed your talk tonight. But I've talked to you about my emotions. I have an emotional problem, you know. I get very depressed and sad. And I don't drink because I want to drink. That's the only thing that perks me up, really. And I do sometimes drink too much, and people say my problem is drinking. But it isn't drinking. Because when I quit, I get so sick, get so upset. I said, what do you think my problem is? He said, I think you're an alcoholic, kid. But how can I be an alcoholic when my problem really isn't alcohol? It's emotions. He said, kid, you've been around AA for a long time. You haven't listened very hard. That's right. You're not suffering from an alcohol problem. You're suffering from something that sounds like alcohol, and somebody's confused by it. It's called alcoholism. And the difference between alcoholism and alcohol is that you can be cured of alcohol by not drinking it. But in alcoholism, it makes it worse and worse and worse. To finally get feeling so bad, you have to have a couple drinks to get out of that mood. And then sometimes you drink too much, because when you drink, it does something special for you that it doesn't do for most people. It changes your perception of reality. I said, Jesus, that's true. Remember the next day I sat around the club thinking what he told me? You know, that can't be right. But it seems right. Because when I stop drinking, I stay the same. Everybody around me turns into a son of a bitch. I guess so. There's only one way to straighten them out, to have a couple drinks. Then I'm ready to go. You with anyone, Granny? That's the one difference, you know, since I was here last, I turned 90 in July. And everybody knows what kind of a lady killer I am. And I go up to pretty young girls now and I have to say things like, hi there, does your grandma put out? Really, haven't had much success with it, but I'll try something else. But to me, as far as I'm concerned, the answer, the thing that makes alcoholism work, and all those things that sound the same, written at the same time, is that we have identification. We got through the wall. The wall is tall and impervious to most things. All of us have gotten lectures. All of us have quit drinking. We've all quit drinking. If we could quit drinking, that was the answer. There would be no need for this meeting, or Alcoholics Anonymous for that matter. But when it is sooner or later, you must drink again. That's the curse of alcoholism. And I thought about that, and I thought, God, that's right, time after time. I came out of jail. They told me my little son had died. I felt so bad I wanted to kill myself. But finally I got feeling so bad I had to drink. Had to drink something I swore I'd never do again. And I was in the Texas Insane Asylum because I had stayed sober too long over my son's death. And I committed suicide. And they found me dead in the car, and they pulled me out and beat in my chest and breathed in my mouth and had an ambulance come to get me. They rushed me away to the hospital. They returned me to living. And my commitment paper said, alcoholic suicide. Very few people are still around who when it says that on their papers. Alcoholic suicide. That's me. I'm dead. But I was in the Texas Nut House for some time. I escaped once and was brought back. Because don't know if you know West Texas, it's flat. They can see you running forever. Well, there goes that little Yankee son bitch now. I finally got out through a quirk of fate. And I have felt as bad as anybody I know. I feel so bad sometimes I just want to extinguish myself. But that's the nature of the disease. If alcohol didn't help it, I wouldn't drink it. But it helps it. It makes it better. And all of a sudden, I'm feeling good again. What is all that shit about feeling bad? Not me, baby. And away I go, and I'm drunk again. I can't explain. Why do you drink? I can't explain it. I couldn't stand back and see why I drank. But I can see it now. And why I see people drink. But remember, the nature of Alcoholics Anonymous is this. It must be used. I think that's why the 12th step is so important. We have to tell somebody about it. We have to try to help somebody. And in so doing, you lose your cares. That's the damnedest thing in the world. When I'm helping somebody, I don't think about me at all. I feel good. And I sponsor a number of people. And I think the great reason to have a sponsor if you're new, and the great sponsor to be a sponsor after you're here a while, is it gives you some place to be accountable. Somebody will notice if you're not going to meetings. Somebody who notices if you're not trying to do what you're supposed to do. And eventually, both my sponsors have been dead for many years, but I'm accountable to the people I sponsor. They call me up every week, and I better be there to answer the phone and sound sober, or they'll be on my ass. There's one now. But she's from Canada. She doesn't understand. But anyway, if you want to know the gift of AA, identification. That is the gift of Alcoholics Anonymous to all of us. Let's take care of it. Thank you.